This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Song of Solomon. Now here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Song of Solomon, chapter 6, with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
While he's been away, the Shulamite has cultivated a new attitude, and she can't wait to show Solomon her new sexual aggressiveness. She's going to make sure that they have a wonderful time making up. Solomon speaks in verse 4. "Oh, my love, you are as beautiful as Tirzah, lovely as Jerusalem, awesome as an army with banners. You look magnificent. Baby, you look more beautiful than an army marching to war under colorful flags." You could translate this for your wife. You could say, "Baby, you're more beautiful than the Bulldogs running into Sanford Stadium on an autumn afternoon." That's what he's saying. He says, "Turn your eyes away from me, for they have overcome me. Your hair is like a flock of goats going down from Gilead." Again, that goat hair line. I tried this line on Kathy the other night, and she said to me, she said, "Sandy, that's a bad joke. You really got my goat with that." Verse 6, "Your teeth are like a flock of sheep which have come up from the washing. Every one bears twins, and none is barren among them. Like a piece of pomegranate are your temples behind your veil." Remember, this is exactly how Solomon addressed the Shulamite on their wedding night. Now, since then, she's spurned him, but he harbors no resentment. He's forgiven her. His feelings for her are the same as they've always been. Solomon's love for his bride was a forgiving, unconditional love. And men, this is the surest way for your wife to open up and to want to draw close to you, is if you show her that same kind of unconditional, unselfish love. And again, notice the parallel in our relationship with Jesus. How often have we spurned our Lord? And yet he forgives, doesn't he? He forgives. His love for us never changes. Jesus harbors no resentment toward us. His grace is truly amazing grace. And then in verse 8, Solomon mentions the size of his harem at this time. He says, "There are 60 queens and 80 concubines and virgins without number." Now, obviously, God's preference was monogamous marriage. For at creation, God fashioned one man and one woman to live together for a lifetime. And yet for a season, because of man's sin, God tolerated polygamy. Evidently, in Solomon's day, multiple wives and concubines were the oriental custom for a king. Today, though, that tolerance is over. For with the forgiveness of Jesus and with the power of the Holy Spirit to change hearts, God now insists on monogamy. Jesus reaffirmed the order of creation, that God's will for marriage was for one man and for one woman to be bound together for a lifetime. It's interesting, though, here Solomon, who was probably the history's most infamous polygamist, his marriage to the Shulamite, at least for a time, portrayed God's ideal. He says of her in verse 8, "My dove, my perfect one, is the only one." I mean, even in this large harem he had, she was the only one that he truly loved, that he was truly committed to. She was the only one of her mother, the favorite of the one who bore her. The daughters saw her and called her blessed. The queens and the concubines, and they praised her. She alone occupied his heart. And he admires her in verse 10. "Who is she who looks forth as the morning, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, awesome as an army with banners?" And the Shulamite responds, "I went down to the garden of nuts to see the verdure of the valley." In other words, the greenness or the lushness of the valley. "To see whether the vine had budded and the pomegranates had bloomed." You know, apparently part of the reason this chill had settled over their marriage, it had been caused by the cold weather. It can get quite cold. You can have some cold, harsh winters there in Jerusalem. She wasn't used to the urban cold. She longed to return to the countryside where it was warmer. She enjoyed the springtime of the year. And so as she looks out and sees the signs of spring and has renewed her enthusiasm, verse 12, she says, "Before I was even aware, my soul had made me as the chariots of my noble people." Solomon comes home in verse 13, and he wants to see his bride. "Return, return, O Shulamite. Return, return, that we may look upon you." And here's the way every wife should greet her husband when he comes home from a trip or even from a hard day at work. Solomon wants a peek at the Shulamite, and his eyes are about to get more than he ever anticipated. At the end of chapter 6, she asks Solomon if she can dance for him. "What would you see in the Shulamite, as it were? The dance of the two camps?" She introduces the dance of the double camp, or in the Hebrew, the Mahanaim. To renew and demonstrate her love, she says she wants to dance for her husband. And let me just say, this is not the foxtrot. This is no square dance here. This is a very sensual, sexy, seductive dance. This is adult entertainment provided to a husband by his wife with the intention of pleasing him sexually. The Shulamite performs a strip tease, and Solomon loves every single second of her expression of love. Solomon comments in chapter 7, "How beautiful are your feet in sandals, O prince's daughter." Solomon notes his wife's sandals. But you'll notice for the rest of the dance, that's the last stitch of clothing that he mentions. For apparently that's all she had on, a pair of sandals. He says, "The curves of your thighs are like jewels, the work of the hands of a skillful workman." That phrase, "curves of your thighs," it's best translated, "the vibration of your hips." Hey, Shula understands that men are turned on by sight. And so she's providing Solomon with some visual stimulation. She's ditched whatever inhibition she's had. And she is definitely here being the initiator and being the aggressor. Notice verse 2. "Your navel is a rounded goblet. It lacks no blended beverage." Apparently, while Solomon had been on this business trip, the Shulamite must have taken some belly dancing lessons, because here her navel is gyrating like a blender. He says, "Your waist is a heap of wheat set about with lily." Hey, I'm just reading this, okay? I didn't write it. God wrote this. I didn't write this. He says, "Your waist is a heap of wheat set about with lilies." You know, a bundle of wheat gets tied in the middle and it forms this hourglass shape. You know, while she's dancing, Solomon's getting a good look at her body, and he's complimenting her figure. Then verse 3, "Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle. Your neck is like an ivory tower. Your eyes like the pools of Heshbon by the gate of Bath-Brabim. Your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon, which looks toward Damascus." And with all due respect for Solomon, men, when your wife dances like this for you, I would please stay away from the nose compliments. For my wife, the nose comparisons would slow down the gyrations. Stick with the navel as a rounded goblet and it lacks no blended beverage. That's where you want to focus right there. Stay away from the nose. Verse 5, "Your head crowns you like Mount Carmel, and the hair of your head is like purple. A king is held captive by your tresses." In Solomon's day, purple was the color of royalty, and so either he's saying that the Shulamite's hair had this royal, majestic appearance, or she was a punk rocker, one or the other. Notice this, though. The king was controlled by no one. And yet Solomon says there's one exception. The locks of the Shulamite's hair bound his heart like iron bars. How romantic. He says, how fair and how pleasant you are, O love, with your delights. This stature of yours is like a palm tree, and your breast like its clusters. I said, I will go up to the palm tree. I will take hold of its branches. Let now your breast be like clusters of the vine, the fragrance of your breath like apples, and the roof of your mouth like the best wine. Apparently, the Shulamite's dance had its desired effect. And she has danced long enough. It's time now to climb the palm tree and take hold of its branches. You know, in the Middle East at the time, in Solomon's time, palm trees were artificially fertilized. A worker would climb up one tree to extract pollen, and then he would climb up the other tree to fertilize the flower. And this is not far from Solomon's thoughts in all of this. He's thinking of climbing and fertilizing and so forth. The Shulamite speaks in verse 9. The wine goes down smoothly for my beloved, moving gently the lips of sleepers. After having climbed the palm tree, the two lovers now have fallen asleep in each other's arms, and they're enjoying the sweet aftertaste. And she relishes his love. She says, I am my beloved's, and his desire is toward me. Now, before we leave the dance, let me just say a word about modesty and marriage. You remember, God created Adam and Eve naked and without shame. Sin forced clothes on us, and it became a curse for the man. I mean, think about this. Adam went from the perfect world, walking around naked with his wife, eating fruit all day, to suddenly having to buy clothes for her constantly. I mean, sin's a curse, man. I mean, this is what's happened to us. And as long as sin exists in the world, certainly we have to wear clothes. But you know what? In the privacy of a trusting, loving, unselfish, grace-filled marriage, clothes shouldn't be necessary. The Song of Solomon teaches that God wholeheartedly approves of nudity between a husband and his wife. Ladies, like the Shulamite, some of you can break the chill on your marriage by expressing a new aggressiveness toward your husband. I want you to think about this. When you initiate sex, when you greet him from work wearing nothing but your sandals, you cannot imagine the thrill you provide the old boy. Listen, ladies. What a dozen red roses does for you, what a surprise weekend away, what a new diamond ring would do for you, the dance of the Mahanaim would do for him. I guarantee it. Now, here's the fear that some wives possess, and I want to deal with this fear. Here's what you're thinking, some of you ladies. Man, if I show too much interest toward my husband, he's going to become more obsessed with sex than he already is. But understand, that is seldom true. Question, when are you most obsessed with food? When are you most obsessed with food? When you're on a diet. Go on a diet. Have somebody tell you that you can't eat. And see how obsessed with food you get. Your obsession with food dissipates when you know you can eat all of the goodies that you want. And the same is true for your husband's sexual appetites. Ladies, take the old boy off the diet and he'll settle into a frequency that's comfortable for you both. Well, the Shulamite takes one more step to break the chill on her sex life. Notice third, she seeks out a new atmosphere for intimacy with her husband. She invites him in verse 11. Come, my beloved, let us go forth to the field. Let us lodge in the villages. Let us get up early to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine has budded, whether the grape blossoms are open and the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. She wants to take a vacation. Hey, Solomon, let's return to the countryside where we first met, where we had our courtship. Let's enjoy the fertility of the springtime. There we'll rendezvous in a new venue, and it'll spark a passion. She promises him in verse 13, the mandrakes give off a fragrance. Mandrakes were flowers that were thought to be aphrodisiacs. And at our gates are pleasant fruits, all manner, new and old, which I have laid up for you, my beloved. In other words, a change of scenery will promote new exploration. Oh, they'll do what they've always enjoyed, but the Shulamite has some new ideas up her sleeves. She says, let's try both new and old. Well, you know, a little variety never hurts. Never hurts to spice up your sex life, to maybe try something a little different. A change of environment, just mixing up the routine. I'll even say it, maybe a change of position. A lot of these kinds of things can light a new spark. Don't be afraid to try new and old. Chapter 8, we're rolling. Oh, that you were like my brother who nursed at my mother's breast. Like the Shulamite, her brother was a country kid. And she knows King Solomon is more at home in the city, but if he'll just venture to the country, she'll make sure it's worth his while. If I should find you outside, I would kiss you. I would not be despised. I would lead you and bring you into the house of my mother, she who used to instruct me. I would cause you to drink of spiced wine, of the juice of my pomegranate. Come on, Solomon, let's go to the country. There are pleasures awaiting you there. Now, apparently, she didn't have to twist her husband's arm. Solomon was all for it. In fact, he called the travel agent that very night. And in verse 3, he's now on vacation. She says, his left hand is under my head. And his right hand embraces me. Evidently, the moment they arrived, they headed straight for the hotel room. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases. And again, this warning, we've heard it before, sex is too powerful to play around with. You see, sex in the hands of two unmarried people is like pulling the pin on a grenade and then handing it to a baby. He's saying, don't even stir up sexual passion until you're married. Sex is a fire. In the fireplace of marriage, it warms the whole house. But outside the fireplace, it can be destructive. And there's a lot that it can burn down. Let me suggest, too, that this idea of a getaway to renew your love also applies to our relationship with God. You remember, on occasion, even Jesus would go up to the mountaintop to pray and to hear from his Father in heaven. I know one of the best ways for me to refocus spiritually and to just to sort of break the chill on my relationship with the Lord is to go away for a few hours or a few days, just to get alone with the Lord, just me and him, just to spend some time with the Lord in a fresh place and in a fresh time. A holy getaway is also a great way for us to renew our relationship with Jesus. And then in verse 5, a relative sees the Shulamite, and at first he doesn't recognize her. In fact, the last time he saw her, she was a shepherd girl. Now she's queen of Israel. Who is this coming up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? I awakened you under the apple tree. There your mother brought you forth. There she who bore you brought you forth. Once he recognizes her, he recalls the day that she was born. Apparently her mom delivered her under an apple tree. I mean, in the Shulamite's case, it was true. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And in essence, he's saying to the Shulamite, man, I knew you when you were nothing, when you were just a little kid. She's giddy with love. She's the queen. And this comment, I'm sure, kept her humble. In verse 6, the Shulamite says to Solomon, set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm, for love is as strong as death, jealousy as cruel as the grave. Its flames are flames of fire, a most vehement flame. And then verse 7 packs a powerful message. Many waters cannot quench love, nor can the floods drown it. You know, Solomon and the Shulamite may have had a marriage made in heaven, but marriages, even marriages made in heaven, have to be lived out on earth. They had problems. All couples have problems. Every marriage has some rough waters to navigate, and yet real love endures. As 1 Corinthians 13, verse 8 puts it, love never fails. We're told if a man would give for love all the wealth of his house, it would be utterly despised. In other words, all of the world's riches are not as valuable as love. A lot of rich people got a lot of things, but don't have love. Ask them if this is true. They'll agree. All the world's riches are not as valuable as love. In verse 8, the Shulamite, her brothers speak. This is interesting. They say, we have a little sister, and she has no breasts. What shall we do for our sister in the day when she is spoken for? Now, this could be a flashback to their days growing up together. As a little girl, the Shulamite had yet to flower into a woman. And they had wondered, the brothers had wondered, who would want their sister? They could have never imagined that one day she would be queen. But they say, if she is a wall, we will build upon her a battlement of silver. And if she is a door, we will enclose her with boards of cedar. Now, her brothers apparently were her guardians, and they were committed to help her navigate courtship. Whether she was a wall and lacked a shapely figure, or a door and had suitors knocking all the time, her brothers were going to help her find the right man. Natalie had that same blessing. Her brothers ran off many, many of those guys we didn't approve of. It was a good thing to have some brothers around. She chimes in, verse 10. I am a wall and my breasts like towers. Then I became in his eyes as one who found peace. The Shulamite grew up and she became a gorgeous young woman, able to attract the attention of a king. Now Solomon had a vineyard at Baal Hamon. He leased the vineyard to keepers. Everyone was to bring for its fruit 1,000 silver coins. My own vineyard is before me. You, O Solomon, may have 1,000, and those who tend its fruit, 200. King Solomon owned vineyards that he would lease out to the locals. The Shulamite sees herself as a very valuable vineyard. Her siblings have been tending her for Solomon. They've been keeping her and preparing her for her husband. Now it's Solomon's turn to pay the bridal price to her brothers, just like the lessees would pay Solomon for the vineyard. Now it's Solomon's turn to pay the Shulamite's brothers the bridal price that they owe for the Shulamite. And apparently 200 shekels was the price. Now Solomon responds, you who dwell in the gardens, the companions listen for your voice. Let me hear it. In other words, since returning home there to Lebanon, the Shulamite had seen relatives and old friends, and she'd been going about and talking to everybody, but it's time for Solomon to hear her voice. These two lovebirds are on their second honeymoon. And the book closes with them at it again, man, enjoying sexual intimacy. She invites him to climb her mountain. Make haste, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of spices. The Song of Solomon. Sex as it should be. Read it. Apply it. Model it in your marriage.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams, here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy spoke to us from the book of Song of Solomon today. This book is beautifully written as it describes the journey of love and the marriage relationship that it becomes. We encourage you to make a note of appreciating this book of the Bible. Be refreshed in your soul as you read these words of love and affection. And as you do, remember that God loves you just as much. If today's message has left you with some questions, please connect with us at 770-736-2828. We'd be honored to have a conversation with you. That number again is 770-736-2828. More messages like the one you just heard can be found on our homepage. Just head over to sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. If you're in the Atlanta area, why not come visit us? We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. There's more information and directions at sandyadams.org. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but we look forward to the next edition. There's so much more to share with you as Pastor Sandy teaches again from the Book of Song of Solomon, right here on Sandy Adams Radio.